And welcome to episode number 2 in our series on navigating health benefits for employees. And if you are someone who is just catching this one episode either on Biz Radio or you stumbled across it on different platforms for podcasting, it is part 2 of 4 in a series that we have going on that is helping people kind of understand and get the lay of the land on different alternative pathways to address health coverage needs for their business, for their employees, for key personnel, ownership, all those kind of things. In the first part, we talked to Kelly Rose, who is with ISA, it's Insurance Service of Asheville, and we talked about major medical care, we talked about the healthcare exchange, we talked about HSAs, FSAs, HRAs, all those kind of things. We talked about some regulatory stuff. You can go back and check that out. But for this episode, for number 2 in the series, we want to welcome Jake Kimsey. He is the Regional Sales Coordinator for Aflac, and everybody just yelled at their radios the same way and went, Aflac. I know how that goes. You just can't help yourself. That's all right. We'll get it out of the system now. We're going to be talking about indemnity, supplemental, ancillary, disability, 1099 versus W-2. Those are some of the things we're going to talk about in this conversation. Jake, thanks for being on and glad to have you with us.
Matt, happy to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. In this series, the general goal of it is to give a basic introduction to the understanding of all that's out there in different pathways, because I have found over the years that, you know, one of the most common threads throughout business is you don't know what you don't know. And when it comes to navigating health benefits for employees, it's really something that there's not a lot of basic understanding. Like, people might, they can take classes on general accounting of their business. They can take courses or seminars on, you know, business planning or hiring, recruitment, marketing, all those kind of things. But until you really start wading into health benefits and coverage for your employees, it's for a lot of people, that's their first time stepping into that world. And so I do appreciate your time to talk to us. So people have, you know, Aflac's a household name. And of course, you know, you're focused here in Western North Carolina. And when I said at the beginning, we're going to be talking about supplemental, indemnity, ancillary, those kind of things, give people a basic introduction to those different types of coverage that can be put into a strategy for employee benefits.
Yeah, look, that's a great segue into it, and I'm actually glad I'm kind of following Kelly up, because, you know, the biggest thing we try to do when we're introducing these types of benefits to employer groups is differentiate between, you know, how is it that Aflac works these types of benefits compared to, you know, the traditional core benefits, group benefits like major medical, group dental, vision, those kind of things that someone like Kelly Rose from ISA would deal with. And the biggest differentiator is really how they work, you know, and Aflac at its core, and other policies like it, other carriers like it, it's about pure financial protection. And really the, what we try to put in perspective is if you begin with a core package, or maybe that's something that you want to add down the road, you're always going to have, even if you bring on a health plan, for example, Matt, you're always going to have those out-of-pocket expenses your employees are going to have to deal with. You know, you've got deductibles, co-pays, co-insurance until someone, you know, maybe hits their max out-of-pocket. So bringing on a medical plan, even though it's a step in the right direction, doesn't fill all those gaps. It doesn't protect an employee holistically. And that's really what supplemental policies are about. And that's how we're classified, is supplemental indemnity plans. And we, Aflac plans function best when they are a true supplement to a medical plan. They can be standalone, but they work best when they're placed in partnership with a medical plan, for example. And they're there to help offset those out-of-pocket costs that somebody sees when they go to file a claim for something. The beauty of indemnity plans is that typically they pay directly to the policyholder versus reimbursing a provider directly. And that is also a main differentiator between how policies that I deal with work versus those traditional policies that are going to reimburse a provider directly, which they should, they need to. I think, Matt, you would agree, if the majority of the population out there got their hands on the money that major medical pays out first, there are probably a lot of providers that wouldn't get paid. So that needs to happen. those those kind of plans need to pay providers directly. But we also know that when something happens to somebody, say an accidental injury or some significant medical diagnosis like cancer, maybe an instance of a heart attack or stroke, that there's direct medical costs associated with that, the medical bills, for example. But there are also a lot of times indirect expenses associated with it, in the form of things that health insurance doesn't cover, a loss of income from time off of work, those kind of things. So, you know, it's not just the medical bills that somebody is concerned with all the time when they're going through something like that. And indemnity plans typically pay a cash benefit directly to the insured, the policyholder. And that carries a lot of power with it, Matt. So if somebody, if their priority, for example, during that time is paying their mortgage or paying their rent or keeping the lights on or groceries in the fridge, they have the flexibility to use claim payments from an indemnity plan, maybe to offset that cost.
Yeah, so they're not restricted
not going directly to a provider.
Yeah, so they don't have to just use it restricted for like copays or deductibles and everything, which people I know will use indemnity plans from different carriers, whether it's Aflac or others that provide those types of policies. They can use it to cover deductibles and copays, like reimbursement type thing. But what you're saying is they're not restricted to just use it for that. They can use it for household expenses, because, you know, if you've been through a hospitalization in your family, you know, there's a lot of things that aren't just tied to medical deductibles and copays like you were just talking about.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's a great way to describe it. You know, and again, there's a lot of power in giving an individual the flexibility to choose where their priority is for that money. Because even with the best healthcare plans that we see out there these days, you're going to have some out-of-pocket expense. You're going to have deductibles, copays, those kind of things. And you can certainly use the money for that. But again, just like you said, a lot of times you're going to see some indirect expenses that you could potentially use that money for. And that's where indemnity plans like Aflac Supplemental can be a huge part of a company's benefit package to make sure that there's a holistic approach to offsetting not just the direct costs associated with something happening, but also those potential indirect costs as well.
And another thing about indemnity plans, and if you could speak to this a little bit too, is their individual pathways that focus or mitigate different risks based on what an individual employee might be facing, whether they have a higher, you know, you mentioned cancer plans. You know, if they have a higher risk for cancer, they might be interested in that. If someone's really active outdoors and they do a lot of physical activity, hiking, biking, canoeing, all those kayaking, you know, an accident indemnity plan. Talk a little bit about the varied approaches and the different lanes of mitigating risk that for businesses that are listening to this right now, how they're able to tailor the options available to their employees based on their concerns.
Yes, absolutely. And overall, generally, that's what Aflac plans and indemnity plans are for, is plain and simple risk mitigation. You said it right there, Matt. You know, businesses are always looking to mitigate certain risks. And a lot of that's tied directly to the business itself, but we don't often think through how do we mitigate risk for the people that we're responsible for in terms of our employee base, and having a rich package that includes multiple plans where each individual employee can take an individualized approach to what concerns they have. Now that can start at the business, Matt. One thing I love about indemnity plans like Aflac policies is that we have what I like to call flexible funding options. You know, a business owner may determine that given what my employees are doing for a living, or what a lot of them are doing outside of work, I would like to mitigate that risk for them. And maybe they fund a particular plan like an accident indemnity plan or a portion of the package. You have the flexibility to do that. But unlike major medical and the ACA requirements about premium funding that are tied to health plans, you're not required to pay for any portion of the premium in terms of the employer relationship with Aflac. So you can make those kind of plans available to your employees, and they can choose piecemeal what plans they feel like are right for them.
And so now, you can do that
in partnership with
I was going to say, so you can do that as a specific plan type, or can you do it as like a flat contribution amount from the employer saying, all right, we're going to contribute X number of dollars toward your purchasing of whatever you choose? I just want to make sure I'm understanding it correctly for our listeners.
Absolutely. So an employer can choose if they've got a budget and see the need to fund a portion of, say, the Aflac plans that they're going to offer. They can pick a plan and everybody gets the same plan. They can fund it that way. Or they can designate, say, a pool of money that everybody has access to, say, per employee per month. And then the employee can choose what plans are going to be the best fit for them and work it within that budget framework, and anything outside of a particular plan or that set dollar amount that the employer puts out there, the employees can still enroll in plans beyond that. And we simply set it up just like any other employer sponsored benefit to make it very convenient for the employees for those premiums to be payroll deducted, sometimes on a pre-tax basis, which, you know, helps everybody involved. And then the employer pays an invoice on the employee's behalf. So yeah, they've got some flexibility there. If they're looking to fund a portion of the package and how they do that. But if there's no budget for it, that's okay. That's one thing we love about these types of policies, is that they can be offered strictly voluntary to the employees.
All right. So that transitions us into the next part, and that is about the employee part of it and everything, and paying for that off a payroll deduction, invoice going to the business owner to pay after they've made the deductions from employees' paychecks based on what they've enrolled in. Let's talk about pre-tax, after-tax withholdings. We talked a little bit in the first part of the series with Kelly Rose. I want to talk to you about that as well, because indemnity plans, we're talking about a completely different lane of benefit options and strategies available. Where does the Section 125 cafeteria plan stuff that we talked in the first part, how does that fall into place when we're talking about indemnity options for benefit strategies?
So it plays a very important role. You know, Aflac does a lot of things for business owners to make it very simple for them. Typically, a business owner will see an additional expense to be able to legally offer plans on a pre-tax basis to their employees. And generally, there's a cost associated with that. If you partner with Aflac, and they will provide your Section 125 documents to be able to offer a cafeteria plan and benefits on a pre-tax basis, if that particular plan qualifies for pre-tax deductions. Now, what that means is that if a plan is deducted pre-tax, that's saving the employee money, that those deductions are take place before any taxes are taken out. It's taken off their gross. And who doesn't like to save money? So the IRS allows that. So there's a benefit for an employer to offer benefits to their employees beyond just the benefits themselves. There's a monetary benefit for the employees. But if you think about that, and what a lot of employers don't realize is, and employees as well, is that if you're decreasing your employees' taxable income, you're in effect decreasing yours as the employer's taxable payroll. So even if, for example, an employer decides to offer Aflac strictly on a voluntary basis, they're still saving money doing so by allowing pre-tax deductions. And again, Aflac makes that easy and cost-free for an employer to be able to offer pre-tax benefits. And as a matter of fact, if that employer is offering pre-tax benefits through any other carriers, say through a major medical carrier or a group dental or vision carrier, Aflac will allow those benefits to be placed on their Section 125 documents. So all benefits that are being deducted pre-tax will fall under that umbrella and protect that employer from a legal perspective to be able to do so.
All right. And one of the other things that I wanted to talk about, just so that people hear the terminology and understand what it is a little bit, because when you start talking about different companies that you're bringing in as part of an overall comprehensive strategy on benefits, the term coordination of benefits is something I just want to touch on so they know the term and understand what it is and how it might apply, at least in the first two parts we're talking about here, about having a major medical carrier and then also bringing in indemnity, ancillary, supplemental plans. Talk about coordination of benefits and how that fits into that consideration.
Sure. So we look at, in our world, we look at coordination of benefits in terms of how plans are going to interact with one another. And I think, Matt, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that's what you're getting at. But we want folks to understand that if, you know, they have major medical in place, for example, that supplemental plan, say through Aflac, if they added an accident indemnity plan, it's still going to function like an individual separate plan from, say, their major medical. For example, if I got hurt today, sought treatment for that injury and filed that on my major medical, it's going to pick up a portion of the cost of those services, go towards my deductible, I'll pay my copays, all that good stuff. But there's no coordination in terms of how it works with my Aflac accident plan.
So the payout from the supplemental
plans.
Yeah. So the payout from the supplemental is not necessarily going to impact the payout from the major medical.
That's correct. So most indemnity plans are set up on a schedule of benefits with a dollar amount that you would receive if you receive a particular service, say, as a result of that accidental injury. That set schedule of benefits does not change regardless of any other insurance and what it may be doing. So in effect, you're right, in short, Aflac hopes, I'm sure, that folks have major medical, but they don't set their plans up to deviate away from that set schedule of benefits, regardless of what any other insurance is doing. So they care if you have it, but they don't care what it's doing when you go to file a claim.
All right. And let's talk about a couple of areas where there are some special considerations on that. I know that dental is one of those. You know, if you have a major dental plan provided by your major medical provider and that's in place and you come in, when you look at supplemental stuff that's there, there's certain limitations on what you can do above and beyond the primary major plan. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. But fortunately for us, Aflac does all that legwork ahead of time when they file particular plans with the Department of Insurance. So there may be certain indemnity dental plans that will work alongside group dental plans. And then there's some that don't. So we help navigate that and make sure that we're making the right recommendation for someone who's currently enrolled in a dental plan. If they're looking at Aflac Dental versus, say, that group dental plan, we want to make a solid recommendation there. If they go with the group dental plan, we want to make a solid recommendation of what plan types are able to fit alongside that and which ones aren't and how they're going to function differently. So in the end, that person has the well-rounded coverage they want that's going to work for them.
All right. And, you know, and again, you know, the primary goal of this series to increase the base knowledge level of all the folks that are tuning in for it. So being aware of that and knowing that that is something to ask about if you're a business owner or you're, you know, a CFO or whoever might be touching the benefits conversations and soliciting information on it and going and just calling a bunch of different companies. Now, you know, you've heard that this is something to have on your radar to make sure of that you ask, that you're aware it's there. So that transitions us into kind of a back doorway into another thing where there's a special consideration, and that's with short-term disability. So the backdoor entry there is how you can have two different carriers helping to provide a comprehensive short-term disability, because you only do so many percentage points of a person's income for short-term disability unless you have a second carrier, you can go to a different one. So that's the connection to what we were just talking about with dental. But just plant that seed, everybody, for a moment later. Let's talk about short-term disability plans and how that fits into the overall strategy and consideration for employee benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. I wholeheartedly feel like that short-term disability, and obviously I'm biased here, but those employers that currently offer short-term disability and have seen it work, I think would agree with me. I think short-term disability policy makes up a core component of any employer's benefit package. If they have employees working for them, then that means those people, like most Americans, are working to pay their bills, working to make a living. They have their own bills. They have other people in their lives, their families that they're responsible for. And if they're not working, they're not able to provide. They're not able to pay their bills, those kind of things. So, you know, we really try to put in perspective what short-term disability really is. And it's pure paycheck protection. When you take out a disability plan, you're literally insuring your income. You're literally insuring your paycheck. So that's the way we try to put it in perspective, Matt, that, you know, from the employer on down to the individual employees, everybody needs to stop and take a second and think through, you know, what would happen? What would I do if I got hurt or I got sick and a doctor wrote me out of work? How long could I go without income coming in? And that's where short-term disability comes into play as a core piece, again, of a well-rounded benefit package to have that paycheck protection there, because those things do happen and it can be devastating to an individual and their family if they don't have an alternative means of income replacement when they go out of work.
Talk a little bit,
passionate about disability.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the difference. And again, that goal of raising base knowledge. If people are already deep in the weeds on this, they're probably hearing things they already know. But our main purpose of this series is to increase the general average understanding of this difficult, you know, briar's patch for a lot of business owners. And that is to separate out a little bit, talk about short-term disability versus workers' comp.
Absolutely. So, you know, work comp is there for on the job injuries. And, you know, most business owners are going to be familiar with that. But that's only really half the battle. If you're looking at and really care about taking care of your employees, you've got the on the job stuff covered if something happens while the employee's working. But you got to ask yourself, do I have something in place? Do I have a resource for my employees to have protection for themselves if something happens off the job or if they get sick? You know, most sicknesses, surgeries, planned surgeries, even when we're looking at things like family planning, maternity, that's not going to fall under workman's comp because it's not an on-the-job injury. So you've got those things. You've also got off-the-job injuries to take into consideration as well. So there's a big difference because they cover two totally different things. But both either can affect an employee and their well-being, their income. So it's a good idea. Obviously, you get work comp covered, get that down. But you need to take a look at thinking through bringing on some disability coverage there for the other stuff that could happen to your folks.
And I know that disability, short-term disability, is something where there are so many variables that you can tweak and adjust, whether it's, you know, what's the benefit period, what's the elimination period, what's the percentage coverage, and all those kind of things. But what I kind of wanted to cover was going back to, remember I said, you know, hold on to this thought for a little bit later, and where you can have multiple carriers, this is where that's going to come in. Correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a little while since I've looked deeply into all this stuff, but you can have short-term disability up to 60% of an employee's income that they can get voluntary. It's capped off at 60%. However, if you bring in another carrier to offer a secondary supplement to that short-term disability, you can go up to 72% of the payment. Is that correct? Or if I'm off on those numbers, please correct it.
Yeah. And really, Matt, it comes down to the carrier. The IRS recommendation, which is why most carriers follow along with that. You're right to a certain degree. The IRS recommendation is that with one individual disability plan, that an employer look at the carrier, look how the plan's built, and to not go above 60% of what that individual's pre-disability income was with. And if they bring in multiple carriers, to not go above 72%. But again, a lot of times it comes down to the carriers. Aflac, I think, does a good job, and I think does it the right way by following those IRS guidelines. They're not set. Carriers aren't required to limit, say, with two carriers, 72%. But while we want to look out for employees, we also, one of our primary responsibilities at Aflac, for example, is the employer. We partner with that employer first. So, you know, the reason why those IRS guidelines are in place is because the IRS understands that people need to have a drive to come back to work, to get well, do the things that they need to do to get better, to come back to work, and then make 100% of their income again. So if somebody goes out on disability and there are carriers out there that may allow them to have 100% of their pre-disability income, what's the real drive there for that person to come back to work for you? Mm-hmm. So I think Aflac does a good job of following along with those IRS recommendations and guidelines, and in partnership with maybe another primary disability plan, we can go up to a total of 72% and offset a little bit more, especially where we're in those situations with certain businesses that may have good amount of employees that are higher income earners, where that extra 12% makes a difference. Mm-hmm. But it makes a difference for anyone. But that's kind of where those numbers come into play, Matt. They're IRS guidelines for a reason, and they're there to protect the employer and to incentivize their employees to get well and to come back to work.
All right, two more questions on the short-term disability side, and then we're going to shift gears a little bit in the conversation. One is revisiting something we talked about with the supplemental indemnity plans. When we talk about short-term disability plans, what are some of the considerations, thoughts, pros or cons of employer contribution on short-term disability?
So, look, there are a lot of pros. But there are some cons. Employees generally appreciate having a well-rounded benefit package that where the contribution goes beyond just the medical plan, if the employer has the budget to do so. Obviously, you know, we don't want to put an employer in dire straits in terms of being overextended on a benefits budget, but disability can be one of those benefits that the employer chooses to contribute towards for the employees to make sure they've got everybody in the business has that income protection, whether they think they need it or not. Some employees, unfortunately, some people think there isn't a need and until something happens and they realize that there was a need, and then they can't get the coverage because it's pre-existing at that point. And employers can't contribute to make sure all employees have that protection. One con of offering employer-sponsored disability, if you want to look at it as a con, is that if the employer is funding it, the way the IRS looks at that is that no taxes have been taken on that premium that's been paid on behalf of the employee by the employer. So when that individual goes and files the claim, there is a tax liability attached to their benefit. FICA's got to be removed. Taxes have to be removed from that. And a carrier like Aflac would take that into consideration when that claim is paid. I truly feel like that's the only kind of semi-con there. If it's employer sponsored, there is going to be a tax liability for the employee on that benefit. In comparison to short-term disability being voluntary, an employee paying for it, typically going back to that pre-tax versus post-tax withholding, typically we're deducting short-term disability premiums on a post-tax basis. So in effect, to keep it simple, if you're deducting that post-tax, those premiums have been taxed, so to speak, so the benefit doesn't get taxed when they file a claim and they need it. So that's really the only differentiator between those two scenarios.
All right. Important information to consider when people are looking at this. The last thing I have is let's define short-term, and then we'll move on to a totally different topic. But what are the limitations on length of coverage or the designations, the categories of coverage when we're talking about short-term versus long-term?
So that's a great question. And really, Matt, it's going to come down to the carrier. You know, there are carriers out there like Aflac that will go up pretty far in terms of a benefit period where your short-term disability policy kind of turns into more of a long-term disability policy. In fact, Aflac will go up to a 24-month benefit period at the workplace. But I got to be honest with you, generally, we limit most offerings to 12 months where there is also a 3 and a 6 month option. which is typical for short-term disability, that 3-month option or 6-month option. And that keeps the premiums manageable for most hourly employees. We see some that may see a need and want to go up to that 12-month. And look, if they feel like that premium is in their budget, by all means, typically we're not going above that. But for the most part, Matt, short-term disability overall generally is considered to be within that 3 or 6 month benefit period range.
All right. And shifting gears now, something completely different. Okay. And that is in the first part of the series, when we're talking about major medical, and a lot of these conversations are falling under the umbrella of W-2 employees. However, over the last few years, one of the things that greatly accelerated was what people call the gig workforce, the independent contractor workforce, self-employed people that may have what used to be a traditional W-2 role as far as function, whether it's accounting or marketing or anything, and they basically own their own jobs now, and they're working from home or anything. Talk a little bit about indemnity, ancillary, supplemental type plans when you're talking from a business owner's perspective, addressing their concerns, the difference between 1099s and W-2, what options are there, what aren't, when you're talking about these type of coverage plans?
So that's a great question, Matt. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because that, you know, we find that that's still a major concern for a lot of employees that pay certain people via 1099, depending on their business structure. And if it's a relationship with that individual to a business owner, and that business owner has enough people involved in the business to qualify as a payroll group in the eyes of the carrier, that's very important as well. Then indemnity supplemental plans can be offered to 1099s. And in fact, in North Carolina, there are no restrictions on plan types. We can even offer short-term disability to 1099s. But it really comes down to having a conversation with the business owner, or for you business owners out there, having a conversation with, you know, your independent insurance agent around your situation, how often those people are working, and how they're going to be offered. You know, we don't want to put an employer in a position to where if it's a 1099 that really isn't working a whole lot for the employer, we don't want to have the employer hunting down that person for premium every month. So we may make certain designations in partnership with an employer in terms of, you know, what 1099s he would consider to be eligible for benefits through his business. But as long as they're, you know, working regularly, we can set that up, and they can offer 1099s the same levels of coverage that they offer their W-2s, with one distinguishing difference. And this is very important. Obviously, the way that 1099s are issued, that's not payroll. So that's not necessarily a conversation around pre-tax versus post-tax anymore. You know, because you're issuing a 1099, there's no way for that individual to receive a pre-tax deduction. So that's really the only difference between the two, Matt, in terms of how we can offer it. It just comes down to a conversation with the employer about that individual 1099's relationship to that employer structure.
And in that regard, too, one of the things we talked about in the first part of the series was ownership of policies, or ownership of coverage. And that's one of the things we haven't talked about yet in this conversation, is with the type of policies that we're talking about, with the type of coverage we're talking about, where does the general ownership of those policies lie, and how does that impact portability, the ability of people to take it with them? Do they have to hit COBRA? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's one beautiful thing about supplemental indemnity plans, is that a carrier like Aflac may look at a business as special, and they do. You know, there are certain perks that Aflac will give an employer group, what they consider to be a payroll group versus an individual consumer. They do have direct-to-consumer policies, but they may look a lot different than payroll policies. Generally, payroll policies are more robust, have better benefits, but also come at a highly discounted rate versus direct-to-consumer plans. But they're still, even though they're classified as payroll policies, that are special because they're being offered through that employer-employee relationship, the policies are still considered individual plans. So they're 100% portable. There's no COBRA administration. There's none of that involved. That's one thing I love about the supplemental world is we don't really have to deal with any of that. So when somebody invests in a supplemental plan through a carrier like Aflac, it's usually because they've got a concern, right? You mentioned some of those before. They are active and they feel like they need an accident plan, or maybe they have a strong family history of cancer. Most people get those plans as an investment. Especially something like a cancer plan or critical illness or maybe even life insurance.
Or even like a hospital plan. They don't want to lose. Yeah, or like a hospital plan if they know next year we plan on going ahead and having a kid. You know, something like
exactly
that.
Exactly right, yeah. They want to keep them, and they don't want to lose out on that investment. And Aflac as a carrier made the decision many years ago to allow portability, allow people to take those plans with them if they separate from their employer. But to keep all the perks, so they get to keep the better policy builds, and they also get to keep the discounted rate they receive because it was being offered through that employer group. So all the plans are 100% rate stable, and you've got the protection that once you enroll in a plan, the benefits in that plan aren't going to change if you leave the company. So you take them with you, pay Aflac direct, and maintain that coverage, that protection going forward, even if you, sever a relationship with the employer at that time.
All right. And, as in the first episode and then with this one, you know, I'm all about transparency. One, Biz Radio is not compensated by any of the people in this series or anything. This is general information. And but also the series is involving people that I've had personal experience working with. And in full disclosure, I have done work with Aflac in the past, as I have with ISA and with other people that you'll hear in this series, because, you know, one of the things that's important to me is that I know the people that I'm putting in front of our audience and before the Family Business Forum are people that I've seen in the field that I have worked with that I know are going to, and it's not to say that other people that aren't on the series aren't that way. I'm just going with the people that I feel comfortable and that their expertise will shine through. And so that's a full disclosure thing I wanted people to understand. And full disclosure too, you know, I mentioned this to Kelly Rose in the first part. We hosted a couple of weeks of listening sessions with all kinds of business owners all around the community and everything. And one of the questions that kept coming up was compensation models and understanding as business owners when they're talking to someone in a certain lane of insurance, you know, that transparency is important. I know it's a requirement too in a self-regulated industry, but also, you know, with departments of insurance and everything, but people wanting to know how are people in that lane, like in a supplemental lane, how are people compensated? Is it administrative fees? Is it commissions? Is it from a carrier? Is it from the employer? What's it like in the lane that you're speaking to today?
So, you know, like most folks in the insurance world, were reimbursed directly from the carriers, and that is in the form of a commission. Based on the policy written. The way that I've always viewed that, Matt, is it may be commission, which people's minds typically go to. You know, somebody making commission is a salesperson, and they're selling to make that commission. And I really don't believe that in this world, at least. I feel like if we do business the right way and we're taking an individualized approach to the conversations that we're only having with the business owner, for example, but we're also having those individual conversations around the individual needs of each and every employee, helping guide them to the decisions. We don't look to hard sell anybody or oversell anybody. We don't, in my mind, don't sell at all. I feel like if you educate well and you inform well, that people generally are going to see value in the plans that we offer. They don't, that's okay. But generally, because they're great plans, they do. And if you do business the right way, the reimbursement will come. I feel like that I'm reimbursed for my time that I put in to consulting with small businesses and local businesses. And then the time spent educating and informing a group of, and then down to the individual level, their employees. And that's how I feel like I receive my reimbursement. I think there's a stigma around the word commission. but it's just how we're reimbursed in this world. The way I look at it, Jake, you're on biz, being comped any other way.
Yeah, Jake, you're on Biz Radio right now, where a lion's share of our listeners are entrepreneurs, and they'll all tell you everybody sells. We're in the world of servicing needs around us as entrepreneurs, and with the Family Business Forum at UNC Asheville as well, it's all about where are we serving the needs we see in our community. And when we can make a living by helping others with a challenge or with a need, then all the better for everybody. It's win-win. You've been a real sport giving us your time. We're looking forward to talking with you again when we have our panel discussion, which will be the fourth part in this series. But you know, even though it was not promised or guaranteed or anything, I want to give everybody that's taken the time to talk to our listeners the chance to do an invite. What's the best way for people to get in touch and learn more, or maybe have a conversation with you or any of your team?
Reach out to us directly. You know, we work in partnership directly with Aflac. We work in partnership with, local agencies and brokers like Insurance Service of Asheville that value bringing a wholehearted approach to a benefits package for an employer. My direct number's out there already. It's on every business card that's been floating around Western North Carolina for 6 years now. Feel free to reach out to me directly at 888-552-7234 or at jacob_kimsey@us.aflac.com. We'd be happy to talk to you, have a conversation, help in any way we can.
All right. And for folks that are listening to this on Biz Radio, there's a little home icon on this interview as on the stream. You can click that. It'll go through to some connection stuff. And if you're listening on any, whatever your favorite podcast platform, if you're listening to us there, look down in the description. We'll have contact stuff there too. Thank you so much, Jake Kimsey, Regional Sales Coordinator for Aflac in Western North Carolina. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me on, Matt, man. We really appreciate you.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.